Listen to that sound. It's the sound of rain on a tent fly. Isn't that the most comforting sound you've ever heard? Too bad you did such a terrible job of setting up this tent. Oh, your stuff's getting all wet now. Your body was asking for sleep. Sleep deprivation is torture, but wet sleeping bags are worse. So screw sleep. You just want the sun to rise already. You think about checking the time, but you just check the time. And remember, a watch pot never boils. Boiling. Heat. Although, the whole numbing thing in your toes is sort of working. It's like the opposite of fighting fire with fire. You know how they say shelter is one of the basic needs? If you're like me, you get confused about what's all on that list these days, but shelter's on there for sure. You know, even cave people could figure the shelter thing out. Welcome to the Biped Radio Guide to Camping. In this guide, setting up a permanent camp in the woods for you and your friends, camping on rooftops of tall buildings downtown, and places you can stay when you're on the road that will shock you. I couldn't believe it when I heard number 6. True to the biped philosophy, all techniques are free, but not in a freeloader kind of way. In a classily uncivilized kind of way. Is classily even a word? I don't know. Part 1, permanent camps in the woods. Mo, what happened?
Well,
thank God you don't have a camera and you took out the microphone. So I was really hot and I thought I needed a dip.
It's not hot, Mo.
And I wanted to test my
Mo fell out of his canoe, but we've done arrived at the top secret biped campsite. Emily is here too, and so is our friend Tara.
Oh. Well,
here's to the biped family. Getting wet, I like to say I was the first one to have a swim.
2 years ago, Mo and I drove north out of the city to some lake we'd heard about. There, we piled up Mo's canoe as high as we could with stuff. Hammocks, lawn chairs, torches, a lantern, camp stove, propane, cutlery, plates. Everything we thought would be fun to have at a permanent camp. Wine glasses, candles, a foldable kitchen table that sits us plus 4 friends, and even the kitchen sink. No, really, we hauled out a kitchen counter and sink. So we piled that all up into his canoe, pushed off the shore, and paddled into the woods to search out a suitable spot to set up. This was all Mo's idea. And like many of Mo's ideas, he kind of dragged me into it. He's always dragging me into stuff like this. Although, as our editor Sam Hagenlocker pointed out, the pine trees around were green, but Mo was anything but. Because he'd set up a couple 2-3 camps like this before.
Yep, Bottle Bay.
One summer, Mo had a back injury, and the doctor recommended swimming. Mo loves swimming, so he loaded up the boat he had at the time and headed out to northern Ontario, the swimmer's paradise. He found a little island on Lake of the Woods that suited his aquatic physiotherapy needs, and he spent a month out there without heading back into the city. Swam every day. But it's all fine and great to have a free spot out near all the $250,000 cottages in that area, but hearing jet skis all the time gets old. So another year, Mo and his partner drove further from civilization, farther north in Manitoba, to find a more isolated spot. They were paddling their canoe far from any signs of other humans when they came across what looked like an abandoned camp of some kind. Someone had settled there at some point, probably years ago. There was a small beach built up that made it easier to get in and out of a boat. And a little way up the shore, there was a sand pit. Mo figured it was intended as a place for a tent, so you wouldn't have to use a mattress. There was a spice rack nailed to a tree, and up the ridge, there was even an outhouse overlooking the lake. No taking dumps over a log for Mo. This was the spot. They didn't see or hear another person for 2 weeks until they headed back into the city. Here's where it gets interesting. Back at work, at the label printing factory where colorblind Mo was inexplicably in charge of picking colors for Coca-Cola labels, he told one of his coworkers about the spot he'd found. His coworker said, "Oh yeah, that sounds like old man Jenkins' camp."
And I'm just kind of like, "Oh yeah, right, sure, uh-huh."
Mo told us this story around the campfire at the biped campsite.
He says, "Yeah, he died in 83. And he says, "Yeah, that's your spot." He says, "Look in the back bush. You'll find some steel drums and stuff." That's where he had all his gear. And I'm like, "All right, all right, all right." So I go back there the next time. And sure enough, would you believe, I find two big drums sealed. And I pop it open. And there is this guy's camping gear. His camp stove, lantern, ropes, very neat bedding. He had bedding in there, wrapped in plastic. It was dry as can be. And I'm like, "Is this the guy? Like, has this been sitting here since 1983? I said, "I don't believe it." And sure enough, what do I find on top of the second drum? A stack of, I guess they use it for kindling, National Enquirers and Star magazines from 1982, all of them. It was really neat.
People dream of having their own private island, but how many people ask if it's actually possible? Mo has got a habit of asking these questions.
I had a camping trip once where I had to carry an aluminum canoe through a bog.
I'm talking on the phone here with Sam Hagenlocker, the biped editor. I always like to check in with him to see if he's got any comments.
Every insect was attacking us and everything, but I got big bruises on my shoulders from that.
Oh, Sam, I'm sorry to hear about those bruises.
It's okay. I've recovered.
Oh, good.
You know, you get all the nice gear from Mech or something like that, and you're like, "Yeah, I'm going to really kick ass at this camping trip because I've got my, you know, my Therm-a-Rest and my nice, you know, tent." And but at the end of the day, if it rains, you're still screwed, right? Because you know, people say, "Oh, how about you just put a tarp under the tent?" Yeah, that works for like an hour, right? It doesn't work for overnight.
Right? It sounds like you've been camping in some crazy monsoons.
I think every time that I've camped for, I don't know, I'm trying to think of the last time that I camped where it didn't rain. I can't, yeah, it's been years. I was on one trip. We had to canoe for several hours to get to our camping spot, and it just absolutely poured the entire time. And so by the time that we got there, 100% of our stuff was completely soaked. But luckily on that trip, I did bring a box of wine. That's sort of your first aid kit.
All right. So would you be a fan of glamping?
Glamping? What's glamping?
Glamping is like glamour camping. It's where you bring, you know, your RV.
Oh God!
All your fancy stuff. You got your plug-in cooler. You know, you bring everything.
That's the part that is laughable to me, that they even call it camping, right? Like what? Like, oh, I remember what I forgot to bring to the campsite. My house. You know, like they just bring their house.
Part 2, climbing the Corbett ladder and then camping at the top. A friend of ours, Robin Bryan, asked if he could take the biped family on a camping excursion to one of his favorite spots, on top of a tall building downtown. What does this mean? It means Robin, Emily, Our friend Amelia and I hauled our tents and beer up an 80-foot ladder on the side of a building. Let's not overly dramatize this. The climb up to Robin's favorite spot would be child's play for people who are used to heights, like those window cleaning people on the side of skyscrapers. But a quarter way up, you feel pretty mortal. It's been a long time since we lived in the trees, but you can reason your way up because it's just a ladder, right? Amelia was concerned that she was going to vomit, but it was fine. Plus, Amelia totally made up for her sensitive stomach by upping the style ante. She climbed in a fur coat, ready for a cover shoot of Modern Rooftop Explorer, a really great magazine I'd recommend you checking out that I just made up right now. Once we were safe on the roof and the police helicopter had finally screwed off, we were left to ourselves and with a view of the city we rarely get in such a flat part of the world. And the Northern Lights came out too.
This is the closest we have to mountains. You're looking at it right here. That's why we do it. We need to go camping in the border.
We set up our tents, drank our beer, and listened to some drunk guy below singing 8 days a week at the top of his lungs. It was easy to sleep up there. No one was going to bother us. And we were a good distance from the action of the streets, so even in the morning when rush hour was in full swing, it was peaceful up there. It was quiet. As we get older, our lives seem to tick by faster and faster. You notice that? Everyone notices that. We look back at the past month or year, and it's just a merry-go-round blur. When we were kids, every day was a big deal. It was an epic quest. Now I can't remember a single thing that happened last month. What did I even do yesterday? Did I do anything? But I still remember one night 2 years ago when my friend Caroline told me she'd never been camping. That night we set up a tent down by the river by some mansions. And in the morning we were woken up by a gentleman from the local religious group. I think all the men have beards and they wear a lot of homemade clothing and they educate their own children and all this stuff. And this gentleman, he offered us tea. And then we had breakfast with them and they gave us a loaf of bread. I was trying to explain this thing about the importance of memories to Sam Hagenlocker, the Biped editor, and he said it's sort of like in Of Mice and Men when the three migrant farm workers decided to pool their money to buy their own farm. But it was hard for most of the workers to really save anything up and get anything going because they weren't being paid that much. And, you know, at the end of the day, they would go to the bar and all their money would be soaked up there. And George said that he had been tempted to do the same and buy drinks and forget his poverty like everyone else, but he just kept thinking about the seed packets that they could get with that same money.
Guy gotta have some fun,
said Candy, the oldest man of the three who could barely work anymore.
I was to a parlor house in Bakersfield once. God almighty, what a place. Went upstairs on the red carpet. There was big pictures on the wall. We sat in big old soft chairs. There were cigarettes on the table. And they was free. Pretty soon a Jap come in with drinks on a tray. And them drinks was free. Take all you want. Pretty soon the girls come in. And they was just as polite and nice and quiet and pretty. Didn't seem like hookers. Kind of made you scared to ask them. That was a long time ago.
Yeah,
said George.
And what'd them soft chairs set you back?
$15.
Ha! So you got a cigarette and a whiskey and a look at a pretty dress, and it cost you $12.50 extra. Ha! You shot a week's pay to walk on that red carpet.
A week's pay? Sure. But I worked weeks all my life. I can't remember none of them weeks. But that was nearly 20 years ago. And I can remember that.
Part 3, Breaking the Law. Robin Bryan, our rooftop camping tour guide, said when we were up on the roof that he doesn't mind going where he's not supposed to.
It's a really nice view. and it's harming no one. And I bring my own tent, my own beer, and I'll clean up after myself.
Same thing with Mo. Mo loves making a camp in the woods, and he's not too concerned if he has permission or not. Actually, Mo says he tries to exercise one act of civil disobedience every day. I'm not sure if this is really a daily practice of his or not, but it's good to remind yourself that you have the choice about whether to obey or ignore a rule. And I think we should think about whether we want to follow the rules or not. Ultimately, all of our rules are supposed to be enforced with a physical threat. Let me give you an example. If you don't pay your taxes and you're caught and you still don't pay your taxes, you'll go to prison. You'll be forced into a cell and held captive. So you can decide to pay your taxes for that reason. But what if you're someone who decides not to report all your income and you think you're almost guaranteed to not get caught because you're accepting cash payments? Then you're asking the system to correct and create more punishment if that's what we're going to be responding to. I'm just sort of musing on this right now. I'm not pretending to be riding shotgun with Jesus or anything over here. Anyway, I think as much as possible, it's much better to consciously follow the rules because we believe in them, either because we agree with the objective of the law or because we agree that we need to have systems to work together. And if so, compromise is going to be needed every now and again. Have you ever seen those radars on highways that display a smiley face if you're within the speed limit, but otherwise you get a sad face to think about? I heard they tested those signs against the kind that automatically get a ticket mailed your way, and the smiley faces actually worked better than the ones that provided a punishment. And I think they work because they remind us why we have the speed limit. We've decided, using our group decision-making process, that it's safer for everyone if we slow down. So you get a sad face if you don't do that. And it makes us feel bad. Do you agree with the higher principle of the law? Maybe you can break the rule while still serving the spirit of the law. For example, sure, it's illegal to throw your apple core out the window on the highway, but we can see why we have littering laws, and we could quite reasonably determine that it is time to make an exception. Society's better off if we throw it into the ditch rather than putting it into the garbage. But if we do agree that the rule applies well, that it does address the thing that it's supposed to be addressing, we can choose to follow it. Not because we want to avoid punishment, not because we have to, but because we think it's what's best for our community. When it comes to camping where you aren't supposed to, remember that if you're caught, you aren't doing anything immoral. You might have screwed up a bit, but you're not intending to hurt anyone. You're doing your best to respect other people, and also, you are breaking the law. So if someone calls you on it, like a police officer doing their job, just make sure to be really nice about everything. Also, remember, the worse things go, the less you'll have to exaggerate when you're telling stories to your grandchildren. One time I woke up at night and what the hell? Was there a light shining on my tent? Was there someone saying something? You know, I was sort of half sleeping, like what's going on? But yeah, there was for sure someone out there talking to me. Unzip the tent real slow. I want to see your hands. This was Texas. I obeyed the voice and stood in the flashlight beam in my underwear, still half sleeping, but it all worked out fine and it was a funny thing to talk about in the morning. Part 4. Creativity is a lifestyle. One time, my friend and neighbor Mike Friesen and another friend and I were making our way across the Yucatan in Mexico on bicycles. It was dark out on the highway by the time we reached our destination. We had already missed our sunset window for scouting out a camping spot. So we figured we might as well find some tacos first and make a plan after. We asked about camping and the taco guy said we should go to such and such a park and we could camp there. We traced the route in his instructions, but we definitely could not camp there. What we were looking at was more like a town square than a park. It was a busy place, lit up, We for sure couldn't camp there. I remember it was all decorated up for Christmas too, including this four-story tall Christmas tree cone thing. People were pretty excited about that ridiculous green cone. But where were we supposed to camp? Like, there was nowhere. But Mike said he wanted to have a look around the square to see if there was a place to camp. I was like, man, I could see the whole thing from here. No, just give me a sec. So the two of us watched him walk around for a bit. But when he came back, he said, guys, I found a spot. What he wanted to do was camp inside the Christmas tree. He checked and it was hollow with lots of room inside to set up our tents. Not only is it hilarious to camp inside of a giant fake Christmas tree as locals took their pictures in front of it, but it was also the most practical place. We had no idea where we could camp in the city, but this was safe and hidden and it solved our problem perfectly. And Mike had had the imagination to see that. John Cleese, the Monty Python guy, thought that he was less talented than his writing partner, but he was also more productive. More of his stuff ended up making it into the films. His explanation was that he was willing to keep hunting for a solution, even after the obvious one had already presented itself. He said it's uncomfortable to sit with unresolved problems, so most people either give up resolving the matter by assuming that it's impossible, or they just jump to the first obvious solution. But the imagination is a muscle that needs to be stretched and challenged. Impossible situations deserve a second look. And in this way, creativity is a practice and a way of life. A couple of years later, I took the train across the mountains from Oakland to Salt Lake City. I was there in Salt Lake to intercept two gals who were on a road trip together, and I had such a big crush on one of them. The train schedule meant that I had a night to kill there. No problem. Except that the nighttime is usually the most expensive part of traveling. I didn't really have much money. It's weird, though. It's weird that it's the most expensive time of traveling because you take up almost no space and you consume only air for 8 hours. During the day, you can hang out at cafes or in parks. And for all people know, you could be a millionaire. But come nightfall, if you've got no money, you're for sure a hobo. I came across a Motel 6, but it was going to cost $80 or something, probably more. And the guy there didn't really make me feel too good about myself either. So I thought, what can I do? And I thought of such a brilliant idea. I could pull a Mike Friesen Christmas tree thing here. The Denny's across the street was open 24 hours and advertising all-you-can-eat pancakes. All-you-can-eat pancakes only cost $9. And $9 is less than $80. And I really like pancakes. But even with bottomless coffee, team morale sunk after hour two. So I ended up sleeping in a park until the commuters started walking through. But at least I'd be able to tell the gals about it and score some points for being an adventurous guy. But they didn't seem too impressed. Oh, well, I guess, eh? All right, it's time for You Know What You Should Do with my brother, Terrell.
Hello.
Hey, man.
Hey, Lyndon. What's up, man?
Hey, so just putting together, trying to find some stories for this camping episode.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Got any good ones?
Yeah. But I was wondering if you might have a story, because I remember something about you going camping on your honeymoon.
Yeah, so?
Yeah, and it wasn't that great.
So?
Isn't a honeymoon supposed to be so great?
It's like, it's kind of like your birthday. Friends say, oh, isn't your birthday coming up in a week? Oh, you're going to have a huge party or what? And then you're kind of like, okay, yeah, we're going to do something. And then it's just like, okay, that's that, I guess. And it's not, and then you have a great time. Like, it was fine. Like, yeah, it was just, it wasn't like, the best time of our lives.
But, but didn't you say that the camping itself wasn't that great?
Yeah, we actually, on the way back, we stopped in Portage La Prairie and stayed in a hotel.
Oh, home of the world's largest Coke can.
That's right. That's right. You got it. That's the place. Yeah.
Okay.
You know what you should do?
No, what?
Watch out for overhyped honeymoons. Okay?
Part 5. The Kindness of Strangers. If honeymoons and birthdays aren't predictably the best times of life, then that leaves a bunch of cans of worms about joy that will go unopened for now. But I will contribute a bit of camping-related evidence to that pile of worm cans. During what was for sure the best month of my life so far, I made it through the nights by knocking on doors and asking strangers if I could camp on their lawns. Two of my friends and I were crossing the U.S. on our bicycles and found this to be the most convenient thing to do. Once you have permission to be on private property, you don't have to worry about anyone harassing you and you can rest easy. One time, we were fishing for a place to camp in a small town in Oklahoma. The folks at the gas station told us about these two guys in the trailer park there. Someone called them for us and they said it'd be fine, but we should bring a 12-pack with us. When we got there, they took the beer, put it in the fridge, and we never saw it again. Then they told us their favorite trailer park tornado story over and over again as they drank into the night. In the morning, one of them was out in the yard talking to us when his phone rang. "Hello?" he said. Him and I were mid-conversation, so I just stood there eavesdropping. "No, this ain't Susie's number. I don't know who Susie is. People keep calling asking for Susie, eating up my minutes. This is my phone number now." No idea what was said on the other end, but he responded with, "Well, you want to hook up? No? Well, go to hell then." He hung up and said that actually worked for him once. And for good contrast, the next night we camped with the Amish. One February, I was traveling solo on my bicycle in the southern states. After spending the day pedaling alone, I pulled into a town called Lake Jackson. I pulled into a neighborhood on the edge of town with huge yards. I usually shied away from proper-looking rich areas like this one, but I was into the final minutes of dusk this day, and I don't like knocking on doors much after it gets dark. And it's also harder to find an illegal spot, hidden spot, to camp after it's dark, because you need some light to sneak around as well. So I pulled into this area, I propped my loaded-up bicycle against a tree, and knocked on a door. No one came. I got back on my bicycle and pedaled around the bend to another house. I rung the bell. Same thing, no answer. It was completely dark at that point, and I was also just out of courage, so I decided to hit the highway to see what else I could find. A few minutes later, a cop passed me and flashed their lights to, pull over now. This isn't necessarily a bad thing at all. Officers will often suggest a spot. He asked me if I had knocked on someone's door. I said, "Yeah." He said, "Yeah, people around here, they don't really like that sort of thing." But he told me about a place I could camp in the town park where he said he wouldn't mind. "Just don't stick around too long. Ron Paul likes to go for his morning walk through there." In my everyday life, I'm not used to being judged as a threat. But someone looked to see who was knocking and saw me and then decided to call the cops. And I've also been there when someone has actually drawn the curtain to see who is there and seen the fear in their eyes before they drop the curtain and hope I go away. When that happens, your self-image as a decent person is called into question. I know I won't do anyone any harm, but if they call the police, I know that my presence has made them uncomfortable and it's humiliating to be seen as a creep. And this isn't some sob story. It's my choice to travel on a bicycle through areas with no campgrounds, and I try to think of it as good humility training when you have to ask for favors like that. But man, there are those among us who have no choice but to face suspicious, nervous eyes like that every day. But when people do trust you when you know you could be perceived as a threat, and then they let you camp in their yard, for example, and then you don't murder their family or anything, it restores everyone's faith. And it's the most beautiful thing. They didn't owe you, but they took a chance and did you a solid. It's got to be one of the best feelings available. It's also a lot of fun to just sneak around instead of bothering with the whole asking for permission thing. Abandoned farmyards are great. Town parks sort of work sometimes. Churchyards work. I remember one time a church graveyard seemed to be my best option. It was behind the church, so it wasn't visible from the highway. Only the cattle in the pasture next to the property had a view. But just to make sure, I waited around until it was completely dark before I started to set up. When I did, the cows gathered around the fence to stare at me in the moonlight as I rolled out my tent between a couple of graves, and I hadn't gotten very far when I heard a vehicle pull onto the property. Man, this was such a bad idea. I turned my head and watched an SUV come to a stop a little way down the driveway, and it just sat there for a few seconds. The engine cut, but the headlights continued to shine in my direction. The interior light switched on, and I could see that it was a middle-aged man in there. Coming to do some custodial work, was this the priest? I didn't know what he would be able to see from his distance, but I was aware that I was standing in a graveyard wearing a black hooded jacket holding two black bags I'd just taken off my bicycle. What was he doing? Sitting there on the driveway, calling the police. This whole scene had the attention of the cows, but unlike me, they were relaxed about the whole thing. Not invested, but really curious. They absentmindedly chewed on stuff, but other than that, they were statues. And I was a statue. And there was an SUV sitting on the driveway. And there were dead people too. Don't forget about the dead people. The hooded figure moved towards the driver. One step. Two. Three. That was enough. The engine started, gravel spit from under the tires, and the vehicle ripped backwards out of the driveway and got the hell out of there. I stood there for a second. I was like, was I the ghost in someone's ghost story? Or should I expect the police next? But you'll have to ask the cows, because I didn't stick around to find out. I packed up my things and spent the night in a ditch. Part 6. Good luck. My two friends and I were cycling out on the highway at night in Mexico again. And the rain and the wind were picking up, and so we headed down some road in the direction of the ocean, which I know seems like a really bad idea, but we knew that it was legal to camp on any beach in Mexico, and it was dark, so we had no idea where else to go. When we got there, the wind and rain had really picked up into what I'd call a storm, and we talked about what we should do. More specifically, we shouted over the wind at each other about what we should do. Should we hit the road again and try to find somewhere more sheltered, or a hotel, or some kind of town or something? Or should we try to pitch our tents in the rain and the wind on the sand? In the moment, I couldn't remember what the Bible had to say about building your house on the sand. And my tent wasn't standing too proudly in the morning. But as the sun peaked up over the Caribbean Sea, we discovered that we'd accidentally camped right next to an ancient Mayan city. just up the cliffs from the beach. These were the Tulum ruins for all the archaeologists out there. The whole site was vacant in the early morning, so we showed ourselves around the dwellings and the half-standing walls. There was even mist swirling around and everything. It was so cool. Sam Hagenlocker, the biped editor, told me that I should also say that the city was called the City of Dawn, and it was one of the last cities inhabited by the Mayans. Another time, in Belize, we asked a stranger on the road where we should stay, and she invited us to follow her into the jungle and camp in her jungle village. You can't plan what you can't imagine. And so the more you micromanage your travels, the more you're limited by your own imagination or Google's imagination. But if you roll the dice and leave the door open, even if you aren't a Mike Friesen or John Cleese creative type, you give the world an opportunity to surprise you, to hand you something you never would have thought to put on your itinerary. Part 7. Welcome back to the jungle.
Camping, it's always felt kind of silly to me. Like, you're just like it's such a contrived experience. Like, you're like, oh, we're going to go out and rough it for a bit.
This is Sam Hagenlocker, the biped editor, again, with some more insights for us.
Like, because of our ridiculously comfortable lifestyles now, which are the most comfortable lifestyles of, you know, really of any being that has ever existed in the history of this planet, is our comfortable lifestyles right now. So we need something so that we feel like we're not complete wusses. Oh, I can still rough it. You know, I can still whittle, you know, sticks and put marshmallows on them. No one in Oregon Trail, you know, brought marshmallows. There's no marshmallow, you know, bag that you can bring in that game.
Your reference for what people who are roughing it did was a computer game from the 80s. It was very tough to make it down the Oregon Trail.
It was, yeah.
A lot of people failed.
A lot of dysentery going around. And yeah.
As a species, we've made incredible leaps in safety and physical comfort as we've domesticated ourselves. But we still seem to want to be a part of the wild, like the way people fantasize about canoeing the Amazon, when instead we could just stay on the sofa, which seems like a better plan considering the low risk of being eaten alive by snakes when you are on the couch. And we do things like jumping into ice-cold lakes, which technically puts us closer to death than we would be on dry land, but for some reason it makes us feel alive. And sometimes, when we could be on our specifically engineered mattresses for optimum comfort, indoors with control over air temperature down to the degree, we choose to instead spend the night on the ground, underneath a tent fly, a half a millimeter of fabric from hypothermia in the woods. A life within a comfort zone is not a comfortable life. That life is a restless life when you have a brain that craves novelty and challenge. The machinery in your head is pretty much the same as what sat between the ears of our hunter-gatherer ancestors. It's almost identical. So maybe it's not that surprising that a part of us is curious about what it's like on the other side of the walls of the zoo. There will be no stopping progress. There will be no stopping new and improved building designs that make tents seem more and more primitive. But we will still want to touch the animal that's inside of us. Sam Hagenlocker and I co-wrote the script for this episode. The scene from Of Mice and Men was performed by Mo Thiessen and Sam Hagenlocker. You heard music by Atlas, The Crooked Brothers, Old Folks Home, The Catamounts, The Magnificent Sevens, Les Jupes, Record of the Week Club, and right now you're listening to the Apparat Organ Quartet. As usual, thank you to Emily Christie for all of her help with the show. Thank you so much for listening, and you can hear more at bipedradio.com.
Emily, we ain't in Falcon Lake anymore, are we?
I don't think we're in Falcon Lake anymore.